Hello and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, March 17th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page, schools may need a tax hike. MC district finances are reeling from student loss funding gap by J.C. Smith, Globe Gazette. A couple of things hit the Mason City school district's finances particularly hard this year. One was a gap in funding between the money the district receives for special education students and how much it costs. The district received $7.15 million last year, FY20, and spent almost $13 million, leaving a funding gap of $5.8 million. The FY20, I believe, means fiscal year 2020. The other was a loss of 130 students this year, which continues a 10-year trend for the district. The state awards its funding to districts each year based on previous year's enrollment. So despite the state's increasing the aid it will provide next year to districts to $7,100 per pupil, overall Mason City will be dealing with a smaller pool of money. Quote, I know this year due to COVID-19 we took a hit, end quote, said District Finance Director Sherry Yoder. Quote, but we're hoping next year they'll come back, end quote. Headcounts matter because they form the basis for the money districts receive from the state, and finances are complicated by 1 year lag in funding. In case of the special education $5.8 million gap, the district had 30 more special education students than initially projected last year, Yoder said. And because of the level of the students' individualized education programs, each required a paraprofessional to be assigned to them. Combined that with the fact that the state has not changed the level of reimbursement for special education for the last 14 years. Yoder has been in school finance, she said, and you come up with the reason for the deficit. In her draft presentation to the board, Yoder estimated the school district's tax rate, which had remained steady since 2018 at around 14.27, may jump to 16.99. That means the owner of a $100,000 home would pay $1,699 for the school district portion of their property taxes. The 16.99 tax rate is subject to change depending on property valuation in the district's income tax receipts, which have not been released from the state yet. The state could go down, but it is not allowed by law to go up. Quote, we kept it steady for the last several years, but unfortunately this year it's going to be increasing 2.8314% to balance the budget, end quote, Yoder said. The district plans a public hearing on the proposed levy, as well as the necessary amendment to this year's budget to cover the additional cost of COVID-19 at 5:30 p.m. on Monday, April 5th, at the district's administration building, 1515 South Pennsylvania Avenue. Our next front page article, nursing homes see hope rising with vaccinations, family visits, activities returning after a year of fighting COVID-19. By Michaela Ram, The Gazette, Amy Rivers, Waterloo Cedar Falls, and Jared McNett, Globe Gazette. After a difficult spring and an even more difficult fall, long-term care facility administrators were thrilled to see their vulnerable populations among the first offered COVID-19 vaccines in December. By the end of February, nearly every resident and staff was inoculated against the virus. It meant fewer cases, fewer deaths from the coronavirus, and maybe most importantly, allowing residents to see their loved ones in person. According to Good Shepherd CEO Ian Stockberger, more than 98% of residents across the organization's assisted living facilities in Mason City have now been vaccinated for COVID-19, and with that, Good Shepherd has been able to slowly get back to normal. Quote, we have started to have more activities going on. The people we have had come in to do activities, we require them to be vaccinated, Stockberger said. It's night and day compared to where it was and where it is now, end quote. The Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services released new recommendations on March 10th, revising its previous stance and allowing indoor visits, quote, for all residents regarding of vaccination status of the resident or visitor, end quote. Certain scenarios still would limit visits, such as high positivity rate for the county, but the new guidance was a long-awaited move after a year of separation between older Iowans and their loved ones. Quote, we need to consider that everyone is vaccinated. It makes me nervous, but if you look at the science, we're as protected as we're going to be, end quote, said Kim Berger Jackson, administrator at Oak Knoll Retirement Residence in Iowa City. Quote, it's been a year. It's unethical not to allow visitors, end quote, she said. Nursing home administrators welcomed the positive news after a year that has taken a huge toll on the staff and residents of long-term care facilities across the state. Less than 1% of the U.S. population lives in a long-term care facility, but they accounted for 34% of all COVID-19 deaths in the United States, according to the Atlantic's COVID Tracking Project. As of March 4th, long-term care residents accounted for more than 2,100 of the total 5,600 Iowans who have died. More than 6,000 cases have been reported among residents, just a fraction of the more than 369,000 cases statewide. Quote, the past year, it's almost been like they've been at war with COVID-19, end quote, said Lori Restow, Iowa Healthcare Association Senior Vice President of Strategic Communications. Quote, after going through that traumatic event, it's definitely going to have long-term impacts, end quote. Stockberger echoes her lament. Quote, we're going to face a lot of long-term psychosocial issues, end quote, he said. But Stockberger did note that residents' morale is starting to return as they begin to see their loved ones again, an invisible wolf at the door. As the nursing home administrators look back at 1 year of COVID-19 in Iowa, they remember long hours for employees, sickness and death of residents, and the constant adjustments to try to beat back the deadly virus. Quote, we're fighting a freaking invisible wolf at the door, end quote, recalled Chris Hansen, CEO of Western Home Communities in Cedar Falls. Hansen gets goosebumps at just thinking about March 2020. Lisa Gates, president and CEO of Friendship Village in Waterloo, remembers a chaplain returning from overseas trip with a sinus infection, freaking out residents. The worst part of it all, Hansen said, was employees who had the virus but no symptoms. They wouldn't know they were inadvertently putting their high-risk population in harm's way until they lost their sense of smell. Quote, this was the perfect killing machine for the folks that we take care of, end quote, he said. Hansen said he made some, quote, very unpopular calls, end quote, at Western Home to prevent introducing the virus. Quote, it was one of those deals where we've got to do what we've got to do and we'll be beg for forgiveness later, end quote, Hansen said. Gates said one family member was so desperate to see his loved one that he dressed up as an oxygen delivery person just to get in the door. Quote, we've seen what the isolation has done, Gates said. It's been brutal, end quote. Roberta Moss, though not as desperate, has been among the family members eager to see their relatives. Her mother, Unita Shielman, is a resident at Heritage Specialty Care in Cedar Rapids, the first long-term care facility in Iowa to report an outbreak. Within a month of the first employees testing positive, more than 100 residents and staff were infected with COVID-19. 86-year-old Shielman tested positive in early April. She recovered and has remained healthy since, but as the months have progressed, loneliness has taken its toll. Shielman, who has 10 children and is used to having family around her, said Moz, her oldest daughter. The past several months have been isolating as lockdown kept interactions with her family restricted to window visits and phone calls. Outbreaks sometimes unavoidable, administrators say. Without family around them, residents at the Iowa City-based Oak Knoll turned to each other, forming a solidarity throughout the community as cases increased countywide, always a lingering fear the virus would make its way inside. But as of March 8th, one full year into lockdown, Oak Knoll had gone without a single resident of the senior living community becoming infected. Though a handful of employees tested positive throughout the past several months, it's avoided an outbreak. Earlier this past Monday, residents, all vaccinated and largely unmasked at tables of five, gathered in a communal space for the first time since the pandemic began for a, quote, silver linings, end quote, celebration. They raised glasses of champagne to Bergen Jackson's toast to, quote, what COVID-19 has given to us instead of taken away, end quote. The residents offered cheers to the staff, thanking them for their commitment to keeping them safe. Bergen Jackson only can guess why her facility avoided the virus. virus. Maybe it was early action, she speculated. Maybe it was just luck. Many were not so lucky. The state's coronavirus website does not publicly tally how many long-term care facilities reported outbreaks throughout the course of the past year. According to some estimates, the virus still reached dozens of facilities despite best efforts. Even with all visits stopped, employees still were coming to work. Friendship Village was one of the first in Black Hawk County to see positive cases in March. From a CNA who tested positive, said Sherry Turner, executive director and vice president of health services. Quote, it just really gained momentum after that, end quote, Turner said. Some facilities, such as Western Home, saw their first cases from residents who had to travel to and from doctor's visits. Hansen said their first death was a, quote, direct result, end quote, of such a visit. Quote, we're trying to take care of a tinderbox in the middle of a forest fire, end quote, he said. Quote, because if it gets into other our buildings, we're going to do the best we can, but it has the opportunity to run rampant, end quote. In some facilities, that's exactly what happened. Hansen said managers at Western Home in Cedar Falls saw, quote, 100%, end quote, of residents at a primarily dementia facility in Cresco test positive, noting many factors were to blame, including the air handling system as well as mostly shared rooms. At Friendship Village in Waterloo, 26 skilled nursing residents at one time had coronavirus, while another 25 employees caught it this past spring. 10 residents died. It got so bad so quickly that the facility worked with Black Hawk County Emergency Management to bring in National Guard troops to help provide care during staffing shortages. The Guard ultimately was unable to help. Quote, we muddled through, end quote, Turner said, noting there already was a nursing staff shortage. Administrators instituted hazard pay for employees at the front lines, increasing their paychecks if they agreed to work in COVID-19 hot zones. Some even provided off-site housing for those worried they'd take the virus home. Administrators who hadn't worked at the floor in years rolled up their sleeves. Quote, the horror stories listening to our nursing staff who stepped up to the plate was heart-wrenching, end quote, Gates recalled. Quote, it was heart-wrenching listening to their family members as they FaceTimed with their mom while she was dying, end quote. According to Stockburger, while some staff stepped up, others dropped off. Quote, some of them didn't get through. Some of them came to the conclusion that this wasn't a good career for them, end quote, he said. And he sees such fluctuation in workforce as at least a small contributor to why nursing homes were hit so hard by the pandemic. Quote, it definitely factored in. Some people were scared. Some people didn't want to wear a mask. Some people had health issues that kept them from working, end quote. Long-term impact. State advocacy groups say recruiting and retaining an adequate workforce will be the greatest challenge facing these facilities. Staffing shortages were an issue that existed long before COVID-19, but the pandemic is likely going to exacerbate it much further, said Anthony Carroll, AARP advocacy director. By the end of February, about 37% of long-term care facilities were reporting staffing shortages, according to the AARP COVID-19 dashboard. That's a decrease from December, when nearly 50% reported a shortage of nurses and other aides. A key solution in addressing the low-wage direct healthcare workers receive, Carroll said. He noted many individuals taking these jobs lack insurance coverage because they can't afford it, a detriment to those who were exposing themselves daily to a deadly virus. Quote, it's not about looking backward, but about looking forward, Carroll said. It all points to needing to have a better plan for staffing issues, end quote. Now, administrators are figuring out the, quote, new normal, end quote, for caring for people at the end of their lives. For Hansen, the pandemic showed him how a wholesale change in nursing home care was necessary, noting that congregate settings, a methodology built in the 1960s and 1970s, looked to be on the way out. Carroll also noted nursing homes, though necessary in many instances, may become less appealing to families in the future. Instead, many may consider home health care options. Others said they assume COVID-19 will be a new virus they have to plan for each fall, just like influenza, only deadlier. Quote, I don't think we'll quickly return to anything that was pre-COVID, Turner said. I think there's always going to be some caution. Being how it hit the senior population so very hard, I think it's going to be something that we're going to live with, end quote. And our last front page article, Game Changer for Clear Lake, Council proceeds with another project near Hotel Event Center by Ashley Stewart, Globe Gazette, almost a year to the day after the Clear Lake City Council approved a preliminary agreement for a multi-million dollar hotel and event center east of Interstate 35. It's looking to add another project to the Courtway Park development. The council unanimously approved a non-binding letter of intent with Moonberg Land LLC for the Starboard Square Retail Development Project, a 6,000 square foot ground floor commercial and retail space south of the hotel Monday evening during its meeting. Quote, I think seeing the hotel project go up, it's had a tremendous benefit. And again, I'm very excited to see the catalytic impacts on further economic development here in Clear Lake, end quote, said Bennett Smith, Clear Lake City Councilman. Quote, it just goes to show if you can land an anchor project like that, it's really a game changer for the community, end quote. The council's action came after it unanimously approved an amendment to the Clear Lake Consolidated Urban Renewal Plan, including almost $300,000 in financial incentives to the Starboard Square Retail Development Project after a public hearing where no written or verbal comments were received. The public hearing was set in February, a requirement under Iowa law for cities wishing to amend their consolidated urban renewal plans to use local incentives and tax increment revenues for development projects. Only projects within a city's consolidated urban renewal area are eligible for tax increment financing funds. Clear Lake last amended its urban renewal plan in 2020 for the Marriott Hotel and Event Center project. Clear Lake City Administrator Scott Flory reviewed the letter of intent and the preceding Clear Lake Consolidated Urban Renewal Plan amendment with the council Monday evening. The letter of intent enables Clear Lake and Moonberg Land LLC to take the necessary steps to formally consider a development agreement. Under the approved amended urban renewal plan and letter of intent, the city is offering the developer of a 7-year incremental property tax rebate agreement in an amount not to exceed $225,000, with payments subject to the council's annual appropriation. Clear Lake will provide the developer a not to exceed $50,000 for municipal water and sanitary sewer connections and related improvements, as well as reimburse a not to exceed $15,000 in professional services for civil engineering and legal fees incurred by the developer. The letter of intent approved by the council was signed by Mike Moonberg on March 5th on behalf of Moonberg Land LLC. Flory anticipates that the site plans for the project, estimated to cost about $1 million, will be submitted to the Clear Lake Planning and Zoning Commission for review and approval before the end of March. The Starboard Square Retail Development Project is one of two projects included in the amended Clear Lake Consolidated Urban Renewal Plan. The other, which remains unnamed, features a 47,000 square foot commercial and retail space with related surface parking that would result in a developer's investment of $7.5 million. Under the amended urban renewal plan, the city will provide the developer a 10-year incremental property tax rebate agreement in an amount not to exceed $850,000, with payments subject to the council's annual appropriation. It will also finance municipal water and sanitary sewer service mains and laterals needed for the project with an additional $350,000 in incremental tax revenues. The Clear Lake Consolidated Urban Renewal Area includes all properties within the following areas: Northwest Willow Creek Surf District, Downtown, Northeast Luker Memorial, Industrial Park, Apple Valley, and Industrial Expansion. The city held a consultation meeting with the other affected taxing entities of Sahuaro County on February 26, and Flory said there were no comments to the plan. In February, Flory said he anticipated the council will act on letters of intent for the two commercial developments after the public hearing to amend the urban renewal plan. Tenants of the proposed developments will likely be disclosed in the spring, he said. If it proceeds, the Starboard Square retail development would be positioned in the southwesternmost corner of the Courtway Park development, comprising 11 slots, 6 highway commercial, and 5 light industrial. and two roadways and a curb and gutter on it nearly 64 acres east of Interstate 35 and north of Highway 122. TD Fuel LLC or Lori and Todd Hall of Sheffield own the land. The purchase of the former Andrews pre-stressed concrete property and the city's $1.8 million utility and street improvement project on North 32nd Street, adjacent to the Courtway Park Development Subdivision in the spring of 2019, were catalyst for transforming the site from an eyesore into an economic development opportunity. Quote, I recall taking the leap of faith and putting pretty close to $2 million into a road out there to get things going. And you know, these type of things require a leap of faith and they require quite a bit of foresight, end quote, said Mike Callanan, Clear Lake City Council man and mayor pro tem. Quote, it's really gratifying when you see them start to pay off, end quote. The street and utility project was completed in the fall of 2019, and since then, two developers have purchased lots at Courtway Park. In June 2020, JSM Investment LLC of Johnston broke ground on the city's first hotel in at least 20 years. The 85-room Fairfield by Marriott Hotel, with an attached 8,000-square-foot conference center and event space that accommodates about 450 people, is scheduled to be completed in August. Old Dominion Freightline proposed a fenced-in center, including 31 overhead doors, a small office, and parking lot, would be positioned in the northernmost lot, or Lot 11, of the Courtway Park development in 2019. Construction on the project was slated to begin in 2019 and then temporarily on hold to the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. Flory told the Globe Gazette in February that Old Dominion was still looking at a late spring or early summer start date with opening in 2022. Old Dominion is a regional and national less than truckload or small freight motor carrier with about 233 service centers across 48 states, 45,000 tractors and trailers, and 21,000 full-time employees. Moving on to more local news, Dunham's Coming to Old Kmart by J.C. Smith, Globe Gazette. What may be the final piece of the old Kmart building puzzle was found on March 3rd. That's when Dunham's Sports, a sporting goods store, filed for a permit with the city to make interior improvements to the 19,800-square-foot space at 2006 4th Street Southwest in Mason City. And Stephen Van Steenhuis, City Director of Development Services. Van Steenhuis didn't have a timeline for when the store might open, and officials from Dunham's, based out of Troy, Michigan, did not immediately return a phone call for comment. Should there be no obstacles to the store's opening, it would fill the final space left open by the departure of Kmart in April 2014. Also in that building owned by Furniture Mart are Harbor Freight, Ashley Furniture, and Planet Fitness. Furniture Mart also owns the new building going up in the southwest corner of the parking lot, which is slated to become a T-Mobile store. Our next article, Officials, No Dogs in Wildlife Areas During Nesting Season by Melanie Mergen, Globe Gazette. The Cerro Gordo County Conservation Board, CGCCB, is reminding the public that dogs are not allowed at CGCCB wildlife areas during nesting season. Each year from March 15th to July 15th, dogs are prohibited in CGCCB wildlife areas to protect ground nesting wildlife like pheasants, waterfowl, and songbirds. Dogs are, however, allowed in designated training areas during this time period at the Mike Zack Wildlife Area, the South Shell Rock River Greenbelt, and Quarry Lake at the Lime Creek Conservation Area. In addition to the above rule, the Lime Creek Conservation Area, Wilkinson Park, Lynn Grove Park, Ingerbertson Park, and Strand Park require all dogs to be on a 6-foot leash. Dogs can still be walked on a leash at the Lime Creek trails during the nesting season, but dog owners are reminded to stick to the trails to avoid disturbing wildlife. For more information, call the CGCCB office at 641-423-5309. Looking back, today is Wednesday, March 17th, the 76th day of 2021. There are 289 days left in the year. This is St. Patrick's Day, today's highlight in history. On March 17th, 1762, New York held its first St. Patrick's Day parade. On this date in 1969, Golda Meir became Prime Minister of Israel. In 1988, Ivanka Flight 410, a Boeing 727, crashed after takeoff into a mountain in Colombia, killing all 143 people on board. In 1992, 29 people were killed in the truck bombing of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires, Argentina. In Illinois, Senator Alan Dixon was defeated in his primary re-election bid by Carol Mosley Braun, who went on to become the first Black woman in the U.S. Senate. 5 years ago, the Obama administration formally concluded the Islamic State group was committing genocide against Christians and other minorities in Iraq and Syria. An Arizona man was convicted of a terror charge tied to an attack on a Prophet Muhammad cartoon contest in Texas, marking the second conviction in the U.S. related to the Islamic State group. Abdul Malik Abdul Karim, an American born Muslim convert, was later sentenced to 30 years in prison. Finally, bowing to years of public pressure, SeaWorld Entertainment said it would no longer breed killer whales or make them perform crowd-pleasing tricks. Our next article, Police Investigating Weekend Shooting Disturbances in Mason City, by Lisa Gruet, Globe Gazette. The Mason City Police Department is investigating a series of disturbances which took place throughout town Sunday into Monday morning, including a report of shots fired, Captain Mike McKelvey confirmed. Around 11 a.m. Sunday, a report of a burglary was made at 609 North Monroe Avenue, which involved a group of female suspects that apparently broke into a residence. The group fled the scene before officers arrived, McKelvey said. Officers responded to a call from the same residence around 4:30 p.m., where a report of shots fired was made, McKelvey stating that a suspect fled the scene by car, then crashed the car and fled on foot. McKelvey said the department is in possession of the vehicle and the incident is under investigation. He said authorities could not rule out a connection between the shooting and the earlier burglary. Police also responded to two other incidents which appeared to have no connection to any other calls. Just before 7 p.m., officers were called to the 700 block of 12th Street Northeast to investigate what witnesses described as a gunshot or loud fireworks, McKelvey said. Monday morning, a power company that had been dispatched to a residence near South Georgia Avenue alerted police after employees on the service call encountered suspicious activity at the home. McKelvey was unable to elaborate as to what specifically prompted the call to authorities. All of the incidents are under investigation, and anyone with information about any of these occurrences should contact the Mason City Police Department at 641-421-3636. Letters to the editor. Delivery trucks spark worry for mall. I scratch my head when I see all the delivery vehicles on the roads. It makes me wonder about all the time, effort, resources wasted in trying to save a dead downtown mall. And that came from Michael Severson of Mason City. Our next letter. Vote yes on Working Animal Protection Act. Currently, there is a bill ready for debate in the Senate, SF 483, known as the Working Animal Protection Act. This is a good bill protecting your rights to use your animals, whether for food, fiber, farm, work, companion, educational, county fairs, different types of animal shows, enhancing human lives. It even protects the rehoming industry using their animals to advertise for money and sales. It protects the Animal Rescue League's horse riding program too. But ARL is against this bill. Shooting their foot? Question mark. Groups such as the Humane Society of the United States and those like-minded are adamantly opposed to this bill. They claim this bill promotes the cruelest of cruel industries, using your animals as the creator intended them for subsistence and helpmates. They claim zoning ordinances are thrown out the window. Wrong. They claim there will be no oversight to animal welfare. Wrong. They claim the public will be endangered, especially by zoos, circuses, traveling animal educational exhibits, animal contests. Wrong. Please read the bill for yourself. Go to legis.iowa.gov. Type SF483 in the bill box. Contact your legislator in the Senate as a whole asking for a yes vote on SF 483. And that came from Betsy Fickle of Garner. Moving to the obituaries, Beverly J. Walk, Mason City. Beverly J. Walk, 88, of Mason City, passed away on Saturday, March 13, 2021, at Good Shepherd Health Care Center in Mason City with her beloved husband Everett by her side, hand in hand. A funeral service will be held at 2:30 p.m. Saturday, March 20, 2021, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City, with Mike Myers officiating. Committal services will follow in Memorial Park Cemetery. Beverly's family will greet relatives and friends 1 hour prior to her service at the funeral home on Saturday. Should friends desire, memorials may be left in Beverly's name in care of her family. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City. Phone number 641-423-2372, colonialchapels.com. Barbara A. O'Brien, Mason City. Barbara A. O'Brien, 74, of Mason City, passed away Sunday, March 14, 2021, at the Muse Norris Hospice Inpatient Unit in Mason City. Massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 19, 2021, at Epiphany Parish, St. Joseph Catholic Church, 302 5th Street, Southeast Mason City, with Reverend Josh Link, celebrant. Visitation with viewing will be held Thursday evening, March 18, 2021, from 5 p.m. until 7 p.m. at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City. A scriptural wake service will begin at 7 p.m. Should friends desire, memorials may be left in Barb's honor to Mercy One North Iowa Hospice, Mason City. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City. Phone number 641-423-2372, colonialchapels.com. Roger W. Anderson, Joyce. Roger W. Anderson, age 87, of rural Joyce, died on Sunday, March 14, 2021, at his home. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, March 20, 2021, at Bethany Lutheran Church in Joyce, with Pastor Bill Peters officiating. Visitation will be held from 12 to 2 p.m. on Saturday at the church. Face coverings are encouraged and social distancing practices are also encouraged. The service will be recorded and uploaded to the Scott Funeral Homes website Saturday afternoon. Go to www.scottfuneralhomes.com, spelled S-C-H-O-T-T. Click on Roger Anderson's picture, and from his obit page, click on the quote tribute wall and quote tab to find the webcast link. Burial will be in Oak Lawn Cemetery, Rural Emmons, Minnesota. You can contact the family with online condolences at www.scottfuneralhomes.com. Phone number 641-592-0221. Susan, known as Sue M. Mega, Northwood. Susan, known as Sue M. Mega, 78, of Northwood, passed away Monday, March 15, 2021, in Waterloo after a tragic car accident. A massive Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 19, 2021, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church, 410 North Broadway, Manly, Iowa, 50456, with Reverend Neil Manturak, celebrant. Interment will be in Sacred Heart Catholic Cemetery beside her husband, Robert. A live stream of the service can be found here, www.facebook.com/Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel. Moore is spelled M-O-O-O-R-E. Visitation and public viewing will be held from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 18, 2020, at Connor Colonial Chapel, 1008 First Avenue South, Northwood, Iowa, 50459. A rosary will be said at 6:30 p.m., followed by a scriptural wake service. Connor Colonial Chapel, 1008 First Avenue South, Northwood, Iowa, 50459. Phone number 641-324-1543, colonialchapels.com. James Anthony McLaughlin, August 16, 1936 to March 15, 2021, Mason City. James Anthony, known as Jim McLaughlin, 84, passed away Tuesday, March 15, 2021, at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice, Mason City, Iowa. A private family mass of Christian burial will be held Tuesday, March 23, 2021, at Epiphany Parish, St. Joseph, 302 5th Street, Southeast, Mason City, Iowa, with Reverend Neal officiating. Burial will take place at St. Patrick's Catholic Cemetery, Daugherty, Iowa. Jim was born on August 16, 1936, the son of Raymond and Josephine Cunningham McLaughlin of Daugherty, Iowa. He graduated from St. Patrick's High School class of 1954. After high school, Jim served in the Army from 1955 to 1957. On August 27, 1955, Jim married the love of his life, Margaret Fitzgerald of Rockwell, Iowa. From this union, six daughters were born. Jim worked at the fertilizer plant at Carterville, Iowa for many years. Later on, he finished his work at the five-star elevator in Daugherty, Iowa. NASCAR racing was something that Jim often watched and enjoyed supporting Jeff Gordon. His red pickup truck was one of Jim's most treasured possessions. Faith was also something important to Jim. He was an active member at the St. Joseph Parish. He was a third-degree Knight of Columbus. Those left to cherish memories of Jim are his wife of 65 years, Margaret, children, Becky, spouse Bob Seymour, Denise Lawrence, Lisa, spouse Tracy Hansen, Jane Butterfield, and Sarah, spouse Steve Mitchell, numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren, siblings Joseph, spouse Pat McLaughlin, and John, spouse Sue McLaughlin. Jim is preceded in death by his daughter, Paula McLaughlin, his parents and sister, Joni McLaughlin, Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Northeast Mason City, phone number 641-423-2372, colonialchapels.com. Geraldine Lou Hove, March 19, 1931 to March 10, 2021, Clear Lake. Geraldine Lou Hove, 89, of Clear Lake, died Wednesday, March 10, 2021, at Lake Mills Care Center in Lake Mills. A private funeral service will be Friday, March 19, 2021, at Trinity Church, 10681 500th Street, Thompson, Iowa, 50478, with Reverend Will Hunsacker officiating. Burial will be at Trinity Church Cemetery. Geraldine was born March 19, 1931, the daughter of Floyd H. and Doris B. Myers Olson in Sweea City, Iowa. She married Merrill J. Hove on October 21, 1950 in Keister, Minnesota. Geraldine graduated from Keister High School in 1949. She worked as a homemaker throughout her life while helping raise her family and volunteering with many clubs. Geraldine was a member of the Clear Lake Christian Church, CWF, Clear Lake Women's Club, and Friendly Garden Club. She was an avid Iowa Hawkeyes and Minnesota Vikings fan who enjoyed sewing, quilting, writing letters, and crafts. She also liked being outdoors, gardening, and fishing. Geraldine is survived by her husband, Merrill Hove of Lake Mills, children, Deborah, spouse Stan Opendahl of Albert Lee, Minnesota, Kim, spouse Joyce Hove of Albert Lee, Scott, spouse Carla Hove of Highland, Indiana, Ryan, spouse Joy Hove of Apple Valley, Minnesota, and Paul Hove of Mason City, Iowa. 16 grandchildren, 19 great-grandchildren, 2 great-great-grandchildren, sister Shirley, spouse Charles Hooper of Manicota, Minnesota, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, son Gene, and sister Ramona Jacobson. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 310 First Avenue, North Clear Lake, phone number 641-357-2193, colonialchapels.com. Sandra Lee Abrams, September 15, 1961 to March 11, 2021, Forest City. Sandra Lee Abrams passed away at her home in Forest City on March 11th. She was born on September 15th, 1961 to Spence Jr. and Janice Abrams. A service for family and close friends of the family will be held at First Baptist Church in Forest City on March 18th at 11 a.m. with visitation 1 hour prior to service. Memorials may be directed to First Baptist Church. Sandy is survived by her mother, Janice Abrams, her son and daughter-in-law, Travis and April Holton, her daughter and son-in-law, Stephanie and Lucas Wooge, her sons, Joshua Holton and Michael Holton, all of Forest City, Iowa. 12 grandchildren: Emma, Shad, Jaden, Lily, Grant, Kelvin, Grady, Kashaden, Willow, Wesden, Jager, and Maybe. And her sister and brothers: Floyd and Vicky Jeffson, Tim Abrams, Kevin and Julie Pals, Pam and Dan Moore, and Steve and Val Abrams. Sandy was preceded in death by her daughter Emily, her father Spence Abrams Jr., and several grandparents, aunts and uncles, and cousins, and we know she is at peace with her savior. Moving to the sports section, spring sports preview, Mason City's boys track and field, Mohawks theme for 2021, back in business. Kettleson enthusiastic, Mason City team have high expectations, by Gunnar Davis, Globe Gazette. After missing the entire spring outdoor track and field season due to COVID-19 last year, Mason City boys track and field head coach Tyler Kettleson has a newfound perspective on a new season. The motto for the Mohawks after a year off, quote, "We're back in business. That's our theme this year," and quote, senior Christian Rodriguez said, quote, "We're just really excited for the season and ready to put in the work," end quote. Rodriguez is one senior that Kettleson is counting on to lead the team this season. In his sophomore campaign, Rodriguez qualified for the state meet in the 400-meter hurdles. Now, Rodriguez's energetic enthusiasm is contagious. The Mohawks are ready to work this season and expect to send multiple events to the state meet down in Des Moines at the end of the year. But the Mohawks have a long way to go until then. The last time the seniors ran during outdoor season, they were still sophomores. The early part of the season will be dedicated to figuring out what athletes should run in which races. Quote, "It's like a jigsaw puzzle," Kettleson said. "It's just going to be kind of fitting it all together, and it's going to take a lot of the season to put that together. Come the end of the season, we're going to have the right pieces in the right spots. It will all come together," end quote. Kettleson says his team has plenty of depth and should be able to compete in multiple events at every meet the Mohawks go to. Outside of Rodriguez, Kettleson expects seniors Dante Arndt Sublett, Trevor Torkelson, and Thomas Roland to step up and lead this spring. Roland, who runs mid-distance races, is a transfer from Eagle Grove. He says competition at a larger school like Mason City has only made him hungrier to get better. Quote, "It keeps me motivated," Roland said. "There's at least six people competing for our 4x4 team. I can just see that relay changing every single meet. It's going to be really hard for those guys that really want the spot to keep at it," end quote. Kettleson hopes to have as many as 10 to 15 athletes qualify for the state meet in May, but it's not going to happen overnight. Luckily, Kettleson says his guys have been very coachable and willing to learn up to this point. Quote, "That's what's going to help them succeed in the long run, is their hard work and just being able to be coachable," Kettleson said. "We're having a great first couple of weeks here," end quote. Mason City will start its outdoor track season at Nevada on March 30th. Our last sports article, Women's NCAA Tournament. Iowa State women to face Michigan State. Cyclones last played Spartans in a 2009 tournament thriller, by Ben Visser, special to the Globe Gazette, Ames. The Iowa State women's basketball team got a history lesson on Monday. The Cyclones were selected to play in the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament as a number 7 seed against the number 10 seed Michigan State Spartans in San Antonio, Texas. As soon as the selection was announced, Associate Head Coach Jody Steyer addressed the team and told them about the 2009 NCAA tournament, when Iowa State beat Michigan State 69-68 to advance to the Elite Eight, which was the most recent time the Cyclones were in the Elite Eight. Quote, "There's a newspaper clipping on the wall of a suck-up practice facility of that game," end quote, guard Emily Ryan said. Quote, "When we found out about our draw, Coach Steyer told us about an awesome comeback they had at the end of the game in advance. It was exciting to hear the deep history we have here at Iowa State," end quote. The deep history only exists because of Coach Bill Fennelly. Before Fennelly arrived at Iowa State, the Cyclones had an all-time record of 249-353. Fennelly's record as Iowa State's head coach is 539-283. This is Fennelly's 26th season at Iowa State, and it will be his 22nd NCAA tournament appearance. The Cyclones likely would have made it last year too, so it could have been the 23rd appearance in 26 seasons. Even though it's become the norm for him, it's still special because it's new for the players. Quote, "It never gets old," Fennelly said. "It never gets old because you always have a new team and a different team. I've been to a few of these and I'm blessed, but it's our freshman's first time, and it could be our senior's last. You just don't know. And if we haven't figured that out this year, then that you don't always know, and you can't take anything for granted, then you have a problem. This is fantastic. It's so exciting and so invigorating on so many levels, end quote. And we have an opinion page today in the Mason City Globe Gazette, so I'm going to go ahead and read that. Guest column, A Little Humor to Get Us by J.W. Salas. Surviving a year of COVID sanctions and scares, I come to question whether I have lost my sense of humor. After last week's column regarding pulling 6 Dr. Seuss books from circulation for being racist, you have confirmed that I have indeed gotten my shorts in a bunch that and need to chill out a little. The strange warping and flexing flow of time since mid-March 2020 generally gets blamed on the stress of living through a pandemic and the overriding sense that we've been monkey barring our way from one day to the next, just out there on our own. But I have forgotten a time-honored American elixir for surviving crises. Even the most terrible challenges are funny in some way. And I so apologize for my cat, if you can hear him. It's almost food time. He's very excited. Back to the opinion. So over this past year, family, friends, and acquaintances have sent me hundreds of COVID-related jokes, puns, funny stories, and satire. And in the spirit of unbunching my shorts, I am going to pass them along to you. Homeschool mom day one. I wonder how I can get this kid transferred out of my class. Shouldn't we wait until after COVID to fill out the census? Day 235 at home and see the dog is looking at me like, see, this is why I chew the furniture. I never thought the comment, quote, I wouldn't touch them with a 6-foot pole, end quote, would become a national policy, but here we are. After 6 years of wanting to thoroughly clean and organize my workshop but always claiming lack of time, this week I realized that wasn't the reason. This morning I saw a neighbor talking to her cat. It was obvious she thought her cat understood her. I came to my house, told my dog, we laughed a lot. I finished Netflix today. Why on earth did the CDC lie to us? They said a mask and gloves was enough to go to the grocery store. When I got there, everyone else had clothes on. Patron to the bartender. I'll have a Corona. Hold the virus. International Space Station to Mission Control when they were notified that their mission was complete and they would be returning to Earth. Thanks, but no thanks. The world has turned upside down. Old folks are sneaking out of the house and their kids are yelling at them to stay indoors. Quarantine has turned us into dogs. We roam the house all day looking for food. We are told no if we get too close to strangers, and we get really excited about car rides. Never in my life would I imagine that my hands would someday consume more alcohol than my mouth. Anyone else's car getting 3 weeks to the gallon? In response to questions about toilet paper substitutes, quote, duct tape is not the solution to every problem, end quote. They say we should have predicted the pandemic, but hindsight is 2020. Ran out of toilet paper and started using lettuce leaves. Today was just the tip of the iceberg. Tomorrow remains to be seen. Self-quarantiners watched the earth rotate and the sun rise and set. After 24 hours, they were bored, so they called it a day. If you need 144 rolls of toilet paper for a month-long quarantine, you probably should have seen a doctor long before COVID-19. My wife purchased a world map and then gave me a dart and said, quote, throw this and wherever it lands, that's where we're vacationing when this pandemic ends, end quote. Turns out we're spending 2 weeks behind the fridge. And finally, wife to husband, did I get fat during COVID quarantine? Husband replies, you weren't exactly that skinny to begin with. Time of death, 11 p.m. Cause of death, COVID-19. Humor is humanity's free coping mechanism, and Americans are better than anyone else at it. Humor is a medium that both distracts us from the horrors of the world while still allowing us to get our best and worst thoughts out of our heads to live another day. Cheers. And again, that opinion came from J.W. Salas, who is a Mason City resident, and Mabee's Iowa own Samuel Clemens in the making. You'll be the judge. Opinions are his own. Our next opinion, Mason City Update, City Hall reopening on March 22nd by Aaron Burnett. In addition to normal staff recruitments, several city departments are currently taking applications for various season positions and internships. The summer season is a busy time for construction, cultural, and recreation-related programs and staff. It is critical to get the need positions filled in advance of the summer to ensure the smooth operation of these departments, and the value these employees provide is tremendous. Without seasonal help, the expanded offerings during summer programs would not occur, and contractors would be delayed waiting for information and approvals. This year, the high amount of utility work and construction will lead to an even greater burden on staff to keep up with the progress on these projects. But the engineering department is planning ahead for these demands and putting the necessary resources in place. This year will feature the much anticipated reopening of the approved aquatic center with restored water slides, new children's play area, and renovated bathhouse. Events booking at the Mason City Multipurpose Arena are increasing, and as vaccinations continue to increase, these normal community activities will be reinstated across the departments and facilities. Accordingly, City Hall will be open on March 22nd to the public. Like all city facilities, the mask requirement and other COVID precautions will stay in place in City Hall to ensure the safety of both city employees and the public. However, we are glad that the public will be able to conduct business again in person. Several community leaders were able to host Governor Kim Reynolds on Friday. The governor was able to see firsthand the innovative placemaking efforts of Mason City and the economic development that has occurred because of these investments. The focus of the visits was the Riverwalk and the Willow Creek area. This area is recognized as part of Mason City, Iowa's Great Places designation and holds a lot of potential for increased downtown development and proximity to the River City Renaissance project. With the hotel and conference center moving toward construction, the future residential and commercial development in the downtown are important to start planning. The city has already had inquiries for several developments in the downtown, and staff is working to ensure that these developments suit the needs of the community and fill gaps in the amenities and services in the area. This planning will provide for the continued success in Mason City's downtown redevelopment. Again, that opinion came from Aaron Burnett, who is the city administrator for the city of Mason City. Our last opinion today, cracking down on elder abuse, by Amanda Reagan. Better protections for Iowa seniors unanimously passed the Senate on March 9th. Many older Iowans are vulnerable to abuse and exploitation by those who don't have their best interests at heart. Often, the perpetrator is someone they know, even a family member. The Department of Human Services and other organizations that provide services to older Iowans have expressed concerns about the prevalence of elder abuse throughout the state, and the Iowa Attorney General has pushed for more stringent laws. SF-522 protects those at risk by establishing the crime of, quote, older individual assault, end quote, when the victim is 60 or older. Penalties will range from a simple misdemeanor to a Class D felony, depending on the severity. Establishing the crime of, quote, theft against an older individual, end quote, which will provide stronger penalties when a victim of theft is 60 years old or older. Establishing criminal penalties for elder abuse, including physical abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, isolation, or sexual exploitation. Penalties would range from a serious misdemeanor to a Class C felony. Establishing the crime of, quote, financial exploitation of an older individual, end quote. Penalties would range from a serious misdemeanor to a Class B felony. Enhancing the civil penalty for consumer fraud committed against anyone 60 years or older. The bill is now under consideration in the House. First Funnel narrows bill list. Last week, the legislator passed a key deadline, the, quote, first funnel, end quote, for Senate policy bills to remain eligible for consideration. They had to be approved by a Senate committee. House policy bills had to be approved by a House committee to remain alive. The funnel helps legislators narrow our focus to what has a real chance of becoming law this year. Fortunately, many bad ideas have died, and lots of good opportunities still have the chance to make it to the governor's desk. With the time that we have left in the 2021 session, I am hopeful that all legislators will focus on areas of agreement and work toward meeting Iowans' most pressing needs. And that opinion came from State Senator Amanda Reagan, who represents Iowa Senate District 27, which includes Franklin County and much of Butler and Cerro Gordo counties. Moving back to news, Comanche School Board votes to drop Native American mascot. KWQC-TV, Comanche, Iowa, an Eastern Iowa school board has voted to drop the district's, quote, Indians, end quote, nickname and mascot following renewed appeals this year to do so from Native American tribes and organizations. The Comanche Community School Board voted 5-1 Monday night to stop the use of the mascot by the end of the school year. The television station at KWQC reported the mascot was adopted in 1961 when the school opened. Quote, quite honestly, our school mascot is a stereotype, and quote, Comanche Superintendent Thomas Parker said. A new mascot was not immediately chosen. The decision comes as teams on all levels across the country are changing or reconsidering mascots considered to be culturally insensitive. The Washington football team of the NFL dropped its Redskins mascot last year, and Major League Baseball's Atlanta Braves has stopped using the Chief Wahoo mascot. The Kansas City Chiefs are under pressure to end the traditional, quote, war chant, end quote, by fans that use a chopping hand motion designed to mimic the Native American tomahawk. Most spoke in favor of keeping the mascot during the Comanche meeting's public forum, citing pride in the nickname. Some denounced the move as, quote, cancel culture, end quote. But board member Shane Bark said there have been calls for 30 years for the district to drop the mascot. Quote, how are we honoring the Native Americans by ignoring their repeated request to remove the Indian mascot, end quote, Bark asked. Digest, shooting in Georgia leave at least 8 dead. Atlanta, shooting at 2 massage parlors in Atlanta and 1 in the suburbs left 8 people dead, many of them women of Asian descent, authorities said Tuesday. A 21-year-old man was taken into custody in southwest Georgia hours later after a manhunt. Robert Aaron Long of Woodstock was taken into custody in Crisp County, about 150 miles south of Atlanta. Atlanta police officers responding to a call of robbery in progress at one spa around 5:50 p.m. found 3 women dead from apparent gunshot wounds, police said. While they were at that scene, they learned of a call reporting shots fired at another spa across the street and found a woman who appeared to have been shot dead inside the business. Earlier, around 5 p.m., 5 people were shot at Young's Asian Massage Parlor in Acworth, about 30 miles north of Atlanta. 2 of the victims were dead and 3 were transported to a hospital where 2 of them also died, Baker said. Gunmen kill dozens in market in Niger. Gunmen on motorcycles attacked a group of civilians returning from market day in a volatile corner of Niger, leaving at least 58 people dead and then burning granaries to the ground, the government said Tuesday. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for Monday's massacres, though extremists belonging to the Islamic State in the Greater Sahara Group are known to be active in the Tillaberi region where the villages were attacked. The victims were returning home from a large livestock market in Banabangu near Niger's troubled border with Mali. The suspected extremists also destroyed nearby granaries that held valuable food stores. Government spokesperson Abdurmani Zakaria declared 3 days of national mourning for the victims. And I am so sorry for any mispronunciations in there. Briefly, pandemic aid. President Joe Biden turned up at a Monterey-owned flooring business in suburban Philadelphia on Tuesday to highlight how his $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package can help small businesses and put a face on those who have struggled throughout the pandemic. Filibuster, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell warned Tuesday of a, quote, scorched earth, end quote, landscape if Democrats use their new majority to bring an end to the Senate filibuster in hopes of muscling legislation supporting President Joe Biden's agenda past a GOP opposition. Meanwhile, Biden signaled a willingness Tuesday to overhaul the rules and return to a, quote, talking filibuster, end quote. Twitter, Russian authorities said Tuesday they would block Twitter in a month if it doesn't take steps to remove banned content, a move that escalates the Russian government's drawn-out standoff with social media platforms that played a major role in amplifying dissent in Russia. Cabinet, the Senate on Tuesday overwhelmingly approved President Joe Biden's pick to oversee the Small Business Administration. The vote to confirm Isabel Guntzman was 81-17. She is the 18th member of Biden's cabinet to win Senate confirmation. Cuomo, the pressure against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo over sexual harassment allegations reached the White House on Tuesday, with President Joe Biden saying in an interview with ABC News that Cuomo should resign and the state attorney general's investigation confirms the claims against him. Opioid crisis. Some state attorney generals and opioid addiction activists pushed back Tuesday against a settlement offer from OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma, saying it didn't include enough money and goes too far in protecting the company and owners from liability. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, March 17th on Iris. I'm your reader, Aaron. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.